Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shoplogia.org. Shop L-O-G-I-A.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shoplogia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shoplogia.org.
The issue of life transcends anybody's petty politics. This goes to the very heart of who we are as a country.
What I see about Governor Romney is that he says, I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God, he's raised from the dead, and, you know, he's my Savior. I see him as being a believer in Christ like me.
There's an Occupy Faith in Boston, there's an Occupy Faith in Oakland, there's an Occupy Faith in Washington, D.C., there's an Occupy Faith in Chicago. And there are more and more of these groups that are primarily faith leaders.
Homeschool, family, love, issues, etc. We have issues.
It is really difficult to believe that it's been 39 years. Seems like, and I'm not joking, it seems like just last year we crossed the 30-year mark, and now we're almost to 40 years of what is called legalized abortion in the United States. And while progress has been made to mitigate that 1973 decision, certain laws have been put into place to mitigate the absolute open door that that decision left to abortion on demand during all three trimesters of pregnancy. There's still a lot of work to be done. And some people fear that it is so entrenched in our culture now, so entrenched in our legal system and in our laws, that we will never be rid of Roe v. Wade. I wonder, even after 39 years, we're going to get a legal perspective on Roe v. Wade with Dr. Robert George here for the first few minutes of this hour of Issues, Etc. It's Monday afternoon, January the 23rd. We're coming to you live. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Sarin Foster will join us to talk about feminism and abortion. She's president of Feminists for Life based in Washington, D.C. Then Dr. Angus Manoj will join us to respond to a book written recently by a Harvard professor, Steven Pinker, wherein he posits that violence is on the, well, it's on the downslope, largely, he says, because religion has become less violent. We'll see what Dr. Manoj thinks about that in about a half hour here on Issues, Etc. Dr. Robert George holds a McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University, former member of the President's Council on Bioethics, and author and editor of numerous books, including Embryo, A Defense of Human Life. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks very much, Todd. It's a pleasure to be back on the show.
Not most, but many legal scholars, even some that are pro-choice, while supporting the ruling in 1973, will now admit that the Roe Court's reasoning was deeply flawed. Isn't that reason enough to revisit this question that has allegedly been settled legally for 39 years?
Well, yes, it certainly is. But let me say that it's most legal scholars, it's almost all legal scholars. In fact, it's almost all pro-choice legal scholars, as they call themselves. It's hard to find anybody, even in the hardest of the hardcore realms of the pro-abortion camp, who will defend the reasoning in Roe, even if they like the result, even if they think that it's a good decision as far as the outcome is concerned. Almost no one will defend the proposition that the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, which says that no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, is a legitimate ground for invalidating the abortion laws of the 50 states. So you're right. It's hard to find anybody who really thinks the decision was reasonably reasoned, if I can use that phrase.
So where does that leave the legal community? I mean, that just seems like a very odd position to be in, basically saying the end justifies the means. We like the result of the decision, so how the decision, and I seem to think that how the Supreme Court arrives at its decisions is very, very important. Where does that leave the legal community on this question?
Well, it leaves Roe itself in a kind of legal limbo. The holding continues to stand as the constitutional law of the country, but almost nobody supports the reasoning. It's generated in the academic world, which is the land I inhabit. it's generated an enormous industry in what's called rewriting Roe. So you have liberal constitutional scholars, people who support abortion in the law schools and in other academic departments, writing articles and getting them published in all sorts of journals, giving alternative grounds for Roe, saying, now here's how Roe should have been reasoned to reach the pro-abortion result. The trouble is, Todd, that nobody's been able to come up with a ground more plausible than the utterly implausible ground that was adduced by Justice Blackmun in Roe versus Wade. This is really a losing proposition. This is an industry that is bound to fail because there simply is nothing in the logic or structure or original understanding of the Constitution, certainly nothing in the text of the Constitution, that would warrant a right to kill the unborn. There's a wonderful article that I would commend to all of your listeners, Todd, that is online today called The Unbearable Wrongness of Roe. It's written by a wonderful legal scholar in Minnesota named Michael Paulson. And that article, The Unbearable Wrongness of Roe, is available on the online journal Public Discourse. And your listeners can find it at www.thepublicdiscourse.com. That is really an article that everybody needs to read.
What, in your opinion, is the biggest myth that is perpetuated about the Roe decision?
That it's written in stone and can't be reversed. It can be reversed, and I'll tell you, Todd, it will be reversed. I'm on my way back. I'm in the car. I'm driving back or being driven back from the March on Washington, the March for Life. This is the march that has occurred every year since the horrific decision in Roe versus Wade. And every year when I go down, and this year is no exception, I am impressed and I am buoyed up by the wonderful turnout of people from all walks of life and by the overrepresentation of young people at the march. It's just so wonderful to see high school students, college students, students who've grown up in the era of abortion, grown up in the era of Roe versus Wade, down there joined with those of us of the older generation who can remember a time before there was Roe versus Wade, a time before we had a legal right to kill the unborn on our law books, join together with us to fight this atrocity and to hasten the day when Roe will fall. And Roe will fall. It's now almost impossible for anybody to defend the regime of abortion on demand without being embarrassed by it. The moral authority, the moral weight is on our side. The other side can only defend its proposition in a very defensive way. And that's in part because we now know so much of the science, and as a matter of sheer scientific fact, we know that abortion is the taking of an innocent human life, that the child in the womb who's killed in the embryonic or fetal stage is a living member of the species Homo sapiens, a human being like you or me, only at an earlier developmental stage. And sonography has been an enormous help as well. Even pro-choice people, people who favor abortion, people who favor Roe versus Wade, will often have up on their refrigerators in their homes photographs of their children or grandchildren in the womb, those first photographs. Sonography wasn't available when Roe was handed down, but we now know that it's a baby in there, not a potato or a rock or a rhinoceros or some free human creature or something like that. We know it's a human being. We see it with our own eyes through the wonderful magic of sonography. Often they have names for their babies. They name the baby before the baby's born. We know whether it's a boy or a girl, because sex, of course, is determined from the very beginning, from conception in the human being. So this creates cognitive dissonance for the other side. They know they're defending killing. They know they're defending an atrocity. They know they're defending killing an unborn child when they what they know to be an unborn child, when they're not thinking about abortion, when they're thinking about anything else, including the birth of the baby to come, they call it an unborn child, and suddenly they have to flee that language and start referring to the baby as a fetus or an embryo in the context of abortion so that they can justify killing.
Can you clear something up for us? Our listeners, some of them have occasionally contacted us, taking issue with the words that we use to talk about Roe. Two phrases, Roe as law of the land, they say for various reasons that's inaccurate, and that Roe legalized abortion in the United States. For some reason, they take issue with that as well. Would you tell us, are we right to speak of Roe, as tragic as it is, in those terms?
I don't quite know what the objection is to the concept of legalized abortion. Let me just say what Roe did, and then you can tell me whether this is captured by the phrase legalized abortion as you understand it or most people understand it. Roe struck down as unconstitutional laws prohibiting abortion for the sake of protecting the life of the child in the womb, effectively through the entire 9 months of pregnancy. It explicitly does that for the first two trimesters, that is the first 6 months. And then by incorporating by reference a case called Doe versus Bolton, it effectively strikes down the laws, prohibits protection of the unborn child in any meaningful way for even the final month when the baby is viable and could live outside the womb, either assisted or in some cases unassisted. So that's what I take people to mean when they talk about Roe legalizing abortion, and in that sense it did. Now, the first question is, in a way, a lot more interesting. Roe is the law of the land. Well, that raises a very important question about constitutional law that goes well beyond abortion, and that is the question of what's called judicial supremacy, the idea that the Supreme Court always has the final word binding on the other branches of the federal government as to the meaning of the Constitution, such that if a Supreme Court opinion rules a law or regulation or act of the executive branch unconstitutional, that simply means it is unconstitutional and the other branches have to bow before it. I reject myself the doctrine of judicial supremacy. President Jefferson rejected it. President Lincoln rejected it. It's been rejected by many, many distinguished constitutional scholars over the years. There's language in the Federalist Papers which seems to suggest very strongly that it was rejected by the authors of the Federalist Papers, especially Madison. The Federalist Papers, of course, being our best sources of the meaning of the Constitution as the founders themselves understood it. So, yes, for those of us who reject judicial supremacy, there's a sense in which it's just wrong to say that Roe is the law of the land. The other branches should step forward, beginning with the president, to challenge the Supreme Court on a case like Roe versus Wade. Now, of course, judicial supremacy has been very widely accepted in our legal culture. It's what's taught in law schools, by and large. It was what I was taught as a student at Harvard Law School. And for everyone who accepts it, so the sort of mainstream view in the legal culture, including the legal academy, then Roe is the law of the land because the Supreme Court gets the final say on what the Constitution means, and the Supreme Court has ruled, rightly or wrongly, and most people now believe wrongly, that abortion is a fundamental right. Did that help, you think, clear things up a little bit?
Yeah, I think it did. Thank you very much. Good. I appreciate it. With that said, what strategy then should we use to legally reverse Roe v. Wade?
So exactly what I would do, and I had the privilege of being a questioner of the Republican presidential candidates back in September at the Palmetto Freedom Forum, which was the first presidential debate for the Republicans in South Carolina. I was a questioner alongside Senator Jim DeMint and Congressman Steve King. And I proposed to the candidates a theory under which the 14th Amendment's Section 5, its fifth section, would be invoked as a delegated power and grounds for Congress to act pursuant to its authority on the amendment, in the amendment, to vindicate the equal protection rights of the unborn child under Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. The first section of the 14th Amendment says that no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law or the equal protection of the laws. It seems to me that Congress can legitimately and should find that the unborn, from the earliest embryonic stage forward, are persons, that is, living members of the species Homo sapiens. There's no difference between human beings and persons. At least all human beings are persons. And then Section 5 authorizes Congress to enforce by appropriate legislation the guarantees, the rights, the privileges of the set forth in the amendment, including the due process and equal protection guarantees. And three of the candidates at the time said that, yes, they accepted that and that they would introduce legislation if elected. They would sponsor the introduction of legislation and promote that, introduction of legislation in the Congress to do exactly that. And this would be a challenge to Roe versus Wade coming from the other two branches of government, a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade. It would be a federal law that would protect the unborn from the earliest stages. And I think that's how we should attack Roe.
Dr. Robert George holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's a former member of the President's Council on Bioethics and author and editor of numerous books, including Embryo, A Defense of Human Life. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. George, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you. Bye-bye.
When we come back, we'll talk with Sarah Foster about feminism and abortion.